Hello and welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Oksana Smerichuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week.
This is absolutely a historic day for Ukraine, for my 45 million nation, and I'm absolutely confident that this is a historic day for the European Union. Ukraine return to the European family. Ukraine say final farewell to the Soviet and Russian Empire.
The sanctions against Russian TV companies and social networks take place today. Ukraine's official government newspaper Urядovy Kuryer published the presidential decree, which enacts the respective decision of the National Security and Defense Council of Ukraine. Almost 470 legal entities and over 1,000 individuals are on the new sanction list. This time, Ukraine imposed sanctions on Russian internet and media companies such as Mail.ru Group, Yandex, ВКонтакте, and Одноклассники.
Галя Милкова and her four-year-old son Ruslan live in the village of Old Avdiivka on the Ukrainian military-controlled side of the front line. The fighting between the Ukrainian military and Russian-backed separatists has intensified in recent weeks. Галя and Ruslan rarely go outside these days.
Crimean Tatars are indigenous people. Crimean Tatars and ethnical Ukrainians who are now in occupation in Crimea, they need protection. Hundreds of searches in the places and kidnapped people. This is what is happening in Crimea now. Criminal proceedings have been filed and are being filed.
Я прийняла на ніч безпритульних дітей. Мені дуже страшно за всіх нас.
Хто ці діти? Серед них є євреї?
Ні.
За кожного пійманого єврея обіцяють гроші.
Якщо німці знають, що татари ховають євреїв, усіх розстріляють.
Я знаю.
Day of Remembrance on the deportation of Crimean Tatars. May 18th is the day of remembrance of the deportation of Crimean Tatars. Russia banned the commemoration ceremony after it annexed Crimea in 2014. Yet, throughout the day on Thursday, there were reports coming out of the peninsula that Crimean Tatars nevertheless made efforts to commemorate by displaying their flags or going to lay flowers. They were often detained and arrested for their efforts. For example, journalist Anton Naumluk posted this on his Facebook page. The day of remembrance of the deportation of Crimean Tatars has begun. In Bakhchisarai, a police car has blocked the stone where people have always laid flowers. In Simferopol, the court hearing in the trial of Akhtem Chiyogoz, which the Crimean Tatars were going to attend, was cancelled for allegedly technical reasons. Two buses with policemen are now parked by the Supreme Court of Crimea. Hromadske Radio reported that Server Kerametov was detained in Simferopol in Lenin Square while holding a Crimean Tatar flag, and later 10 others were detained. Tamila Tasheva, co-founder of Crimea SOS, was in Kyiv. She reported that since Russia occupied Crimea, about 55,000 people, including almost 25,000 Crimean Tatars, have left the peninsula. She explained that they were not leaving for economic reasons, that the Crimean Tatars leave Crimea because of unprecedented persecution. This is something we have never seen before. At least 19 people are now missing or kidnapped. About 60 criminal cases have been opened. 40 people have been imprisoned, and 20 people have been released from custody on condition not to leave town or house arrest. Dozens of searches take place every week. In Kyiv, exiled Crimean Tatar leaders organized a rally on the Maidan, the city's central square. Ukraine's President Poroshenko made two key statements on that day. He called the forcible deportation of Crimean Tatars from the peninsula in 1944 a crime without a statute of limitations. He said that Ukraine is committed to returning Crimea through diplomatic means. Visa-free status for Ukraine with the EU is now official. On Wednesday, 17th of May, Ukraine's President Poroshenko was in Strasbourg, along with EU Parliamentary President Antonio Tajani and Minister for Home Affairs and National Security Carmelo Abela. He signed the document that allows Ukrainians visa-free travel to the EU. After the signing, Poroshenko said that today is a historical day for Ukraine, for my 45 million nation. And I am absolutely confident that this is a historical day for the EU. Ukraine returns to the European family. Ukraine says a final farewell to the Soviet and Russian empires. Many comments in social media were something along the lines of, and what was once called ridiculous has now become reality. Russian websites now banned by Ukraine. On Monday, Ukraine expanded sanctions against Russia because of the annexation of Crimea and the war in the Donbas. They now include 468 companies and 1,228 individuals. This was on the recommendation of the National Security and Defense Council, but this latest round of sanctions caused a bit of a stir. This was since they include two of the most popular social networks in Ukraine, VK and Odnoklassniki, a popular email service, mail.ru, and a widely used search engine, Yandex. President Poroshenko explained the move, saying that an important part of this war for Russians is hybrid war, waged by information troops of Russia. Enormous budgets are spent for propaganda to destabilize the situation in both Ukraine and Europe. According to Voice of America, the US was scrutinizing this decision and calling on Ukraine to find a way to protect its national interests that does not undermine its constitutional principles. The war. Four civilians were killed this week in Ukraine's war zone and one wounded. The OSCE reported, once again, an increase in explosions from banned weapons. On the 18th of May alone, three residential buildings were destroyed in Avdiivka and a school in Krasnohorivka. Ukraine's parliament chose not to debate the draft law proposed by the health ministry that would provide free medical care to those serving in the war in the Ukrainian armed forces. And during the week, 24 more Ukrainian soldiers were wounded and two killed in action. If you are a person who likes to visit bookshops when you travel to other cities, or whose idea of a lovely Sunday afternoon is just browsing through bookshops, this event is for you. Now, if you started to learn about Ukrainian literature, but only got as far as Taras Shevchenko, and then are wondering what on earth is there to read, well, this event is for you. And here to explain this event, we have a guest in our studio, who is Olesya Ostrovska-Luta, General Director of the Mestetsky Arsenal, or the Art Arsenal Cultural Complex. The Art Arsenal is home to the Kyiv Arsenal Book Festival. So welcome, Olesya Ostrovska.
Thank you very much.
Now, first, I want to bring you into this picture of what the experience I had yesterday when I went to visit the book arsenal. I just want you to imagine what it all looks like. You have this fabulous arsenal building, centuries old. It's built in the shape of a quadrangle, has high vaulted ceilings, long galleries, long hallways that seem to go on forever. And then you enter inside and you see this huge hall. Stands full of books, simply covered with piles of books. There's about 150 different book publishers in there presenting their new publication. The hall is milling with people, just thousands of people coming through each day. And there's also strategically placed little coffee corners where you can have a coffee and a tea and something to go with that to refresh yourself. Then you can keep on looking at books. And apart from that, there's dozens of presentations going on, discussions, workshops, even little rooms with art exhibitions, and five whole days of this. So this is something that I saw yesterday, but I think, Olesya, you can fill us in what else is going on. Can you tell me, like, how many people you're expecting in general?
Well, we will see how many people. Yesterday we had about 6,000 people, which is a lot for even for such a big building as Art Arsenal is. But as you saw it yourself, it was full of people. There was a lot of all sorts of sounds, movements, activities. It was very busy and lively.
How many are you expecting? How many came last year?
Well, we don't have a very precise datum at this moment. So we will check this year how many people we actually have. And then we will take this year's data for a benchmark. Nice. For example, in March, we had very popular, tremendously popular exhibition about news, the nature of television news, and it was attended by 100,000 people during a month.
So you're expecting somewhere in that?
Well, maybe less because it's only 5 days. Right. And that was in a month. And it was a very, very, very busy month.
So I only actually saw the first floor and mainly the hall with all the book stands. But I was told that there's many other things going on, not just the book selling.
Yes, the book arsenal is combining, integrating both book scene, literature, and other art and cultural practices. That's why we also have a musical program on the first floor, because you only saw the ground floor, which is huge enough already. But there is also first floor, there are exhibitions. For example, we have an exhibition of old Soviet satiric magazine,
satirical,
Pepper. It used to be very funny. People laughed at it for 50 years. But when you look at it today, it's not funny anymore. You see that the context which brings out this laughter has changed. And it's now not so funny. It's a huge propaganda machine, though. Then we also have an exhibition of illustration to Kotlarevsky Inuida done by Bazilevich.
So this takes you back to Ukrainian literature lessons, because this was Ivan Kotlarevsky's Eneida was the first book written in vernacular Ukrainian.
Yes, it was also published. And when you start thinking about it, it's an anniversary this year. That's why we took it as a pretext to talk about laughter. Right? But if you look, when you look at Kotlarevsky Eneida, you suddenly realize that Ukrainian literature language originates from a funny text. And that is something to talk about. This is our roots and our first text in this Ukrainian that we are using today or close to it is a satirical text, right? A parody. So what we decided to do, we decided to focus in our discussions also on the subject of laughter and humor in times of crisis. We're living in a crisis-driven world. The world is very different from what we thought it was 5 years ago. It's changing from the States to Syria, to Poland, to Ukraine, everywhere. Things are very vulnerable. Borders are changing. Look, it's a very strange crisis, tragical in many senses in Ukraine, for example, situation.
So your theme you were saying is, I think, called laughter, fear, and strength.
Strength, yes. So what do you do? How do you laugh in such a situation? Because Kotlarevsky also published his book in a very crisis times, when Ukraine was vanishing as a unity in some way, right?
So is this that you mean in the sense that Cossacks were declining?
Yes, it was the 18th century of Russian Empire was getting stronger, and it was a lot was changing. Now the question: so is it moral to laugh today? Can you go on, carry on without laughing at all? How do we laugh today? Is it irony? Because in the 90s, at least in Ukraine, in post-Soviet countries, the main laughter was irony. people were very detached from everything, very ironic, right? Is it still irony now, or is it a different type of laughter? So this is what we want to talk about during Book Arsenal. It's the central focus theme, but it's only one of the themes to talk about. It's about 450 events, discussions, lectures, workshops, theater performances and different type of performances, music, poetry readings, all sorts of things. As my colleague Oksana Chmielewska said, what Book Arsenal does, it actually serves as a showcase for Ukrainian intellectual landscape of this year.
Uh-huh.
So this is what we want to do.
Mm-hmm. So I'm getting a sense of what is the big attraction then for so many people. It's not just shopping, I think, because Kyiv has, you know, you can go book shopping anywhere. There's so many bookstores in Kyiv. I'm sure you could find all these books that are on show here, no problem. But what other aspects do you find is so attractive that brings the crowds in to
I think
Book
two
Arsenal?
Things. One is you do not often see so many publishers in one place. It's not. It's like a super mega bookstore. It's huge. Also, most publishers prepare their new publications to either a book fair or forum of publishers in Lviv in September. So this is one of the two periods where you have many new publications. For example, for this Book Arsenal, we have about 1,000 new publications. So you will find new books,
wow.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They are all together. They are new. You have their authors who will talk about their books. You can meet your friends to share your opinions, your observations. You will have lectures and discussions on subjects related to those books. So you'll get not just a book, you also get all the context around this book. It's much richer experience when just going to a bookstore.
So you mentioned the Lviv Publishers Forum. So is that the competition for your event, for the Kyiv Book Arsenal? Because they've been going now for 20 years. I think they were started in 1993. Ukraine, I guess we're very here. Ukraine hasn't had a tradition of having book festivals or book fairs for Ukrainian books compared to Leipzig, who goes back to the 17th century. So how does Kyiv Book Arsenal compare to Publishers Forum in Lviv?
There is always this question. No, we are not competing with Publishers Forum. We find it a very important partner. We are trying to collaborate and cooperate more than compete. I'm full of respect to the Forum of Publishers president, Oleksandra Koval, who is the pioneer of this field and who's been carrying on with Publishers Forum for more than 20 years. Even in time when we didn't have too many books, it was much harder to do it than today for the Book Arsenal. And we're a bit different. Because Book Arsenal, as I said at the beginning, it also integrates other cultural practices. It originates from the story of Mestetsky Arsenal itself, which is combining and integrating different cultural practices and arts. It's contemporary visual arts, art. It's academic art as well, historical art. It's problem-based exhibitions as well. It's literature, as we're talking now. It's theater and music occasionally, not as much as we would like, but we are working on it. As Mestetsky Arsenal functions, this is this multi-dimensional center. That's why also Book Arsenal has this, you know, multifaceted approach. But the Forum of Publishers, it's not just an event in one place. It's the city that becomes a reading city. A Forum of Publishers, somehow it inhabits Lviv as a whole city. Everyone, everywhere reads. It's different with Kyiv and Bukharstan. We are more localized.
In one location only.
Yes, but Forum of Publishers is going in a bit different
they
direction.
They have readings in cafes all over the city.
They go out to the city, and reading is everywhere. Our strategy is a bit different. We are trying to get as many cultural practices in one place.
I see. So this is the seventh year that the Book Arsenal is being held. Have you noticed how it's changed, say, from the previous year? Has the idea become more refined, or has there been growth in some areas in terms of books?
Well, this is what we are trying to do, is actually to focus a little bit on the intellectual direction. That's why we introduced this focus for discussion about Loftum. It's the first time we're doing it. Also, the number of new publications has grown. And just a year or two ago, we were all complaining that there is not enough, for example, there was not enough books for teenagers. And now we have a lot of books of teenagers. Then we were complaining that we have very little nonfiction. And see, today you have a lot of nonfiction, both Ukrainian authors, which is a very, very valuable thing, and translated from different languages. And those are not the old bestsellers, but very, very current ones. We also have nonfiction for children, which we didn't have some time ago. And again, I would like to stress the important thing that we are starting to have Ukrainian authors, both writing nonfiction, this intellectual type of, and also for nonfiction for children, which is very important, because this is how writer's scene is developing as well. There is also one more thing that we are starting to do very slowly. We are trying to connect literature process, literature scene, writers with school teachers. Because there is a huge debate in Ukraine about schooling. We are all very unhappy about it. And there is one of the opinions is that school teachers are often very detached from the actual literature process. And it's very hard for them to have people, have children like reading. Yes, you have to understand the literature scene to actually, you have to love it to pass this love to children, right? So that's why we've initiated a few workshops for teachers of Ukrainian and foreign literature, so that they can talk to both professors and all those professors are also writers, and writers of fiction, to immerse, to understand better the literature process. This is just one small thing that we started this year, but we're very motivated to develop it further.
I could certainly notice that, just simply the presence of there's lots of very eager children looking at books, and the section with the children's literature seems to have grown, and it looks really thriving. And also I noticed that you mentioned that there's a lot of nonfiction in Ukraine and being produced now, and some of it is, or there's a lot of it that's recent, or translations of recent publications in English, or for example, you know, items from, you know, the New York Times bestseller list. So this is growth in translations. Doesn't that mean then that it makes it tougher for Ukrainian authors of nonfiction? Because they've got you know, more competition, and they have to really. If the publisher can do something that's a translation that's much cheaper, you know, the Ukrainian authors then have to produce better.
Yes, they have to. Then they have to shape
their writing.
Yes. They have to become better. But there are very interesting Ukrainian authors, which is a benefit, you know, of open society when you have open access to the international literature scene, either in original or in translation. You just become a better reader and better writer.
Let's hope. And also, one thing I noticed. Who wasn't there? I didn't notice any state publishing houses or publishing houses that started off as, I guess, state-owned and then developed further. It seemed to me that all these stands, all these groups were all new publishers that have probably a lot of them have been founded in the past 10 years, let's say. Oh, perhaps 20.
Yes, perhaps 20. In Soviet times, all the publishing was state-owned. Since that time, the industry has developed tremendously, which is a very, very good sign. And if the state-owned publishing houses cannot compete, well, it's not the, our focus of attention as a society should not be to of some publishing houses through the state. We need to have good books. We need to have jobs, right? We need to have books in developing. So that's the important thing. If private sector is doing that, great.
What is the feedback from... you've no doubt been talking to some of the book publishers, listening in on the discussions, etc. What are the challenges in particular that Ukrainian book publishers face?
Well, one thing is the level of reading is not as high as we would like to.
I think in Soviet times, Ukrainians felt very proud that there was such a reading-oriented people, and there's a great culture of reading. And then what happened is that the electronic age, everyone is just writing things in the internet and in social media, and instead of reading.
I couldn't tell you. It might happen that this idea of Soviet reading people was a myth. Cultural proposal was very low, so you didn't have too many things to choose from, right? So people read something, maybe. I don't know any serious book or any publication on that, so I couldn't give you better arguments.
Mm-hmm.
But when you take the latest research that we have about the reading level, it's not as high as we would like to. If you look at the number of publications, for example, right, or number of bookstores outside of Kiev, I'm not talking about Kiev and Lviv, because these cities, they have readers and they have bookstores. But Ukraine is not just two cities, right? Mm-hmm. And there you will not have enough bookstores and enough readers. One of the reasons for that might be, again, our system of education, how we teach our children to read. Our post-Soviet system of education, which we inherited from Soviet Union, is very common base. And the process of learning to read for little children is not a very pleasant process in our schools. Mm-hmm. So this is how we develop people who do not read later. This needs to be changed, and this needs to be addressed. But what is very, very positive is that in the last few years, we started to talk about it loudly and openly. The Ministry of Education is very open for such debate. They have started changing things in programs. They have started working with the teachers as well to change that. So I'm quite optimistic, but there is a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm. And then I think that you have possibly, it would help if the general business environment was more conducive, because after all, publishing is also a business, just as much as, you know, selling shoes in some respects. And I guess everybody then has to deal with that, all these other, restrictions, or trying to figure out the bureaucracy of and trying to, figuring out marketing. And perhaps someone mentioned to me that there was, you need an appropriate market analysis to be able to, you know, figure out how to sell. But that's these things that still need to be developed. I was also very positively impressed that there's attention being brought to, say, new areas such as, say, tolerance to other people, to handicapped people, and, for example, an interest in Braille. I noticed there was a whole room devoted to books, Ukrainian books in Braille, perhaps something that is a bit exotic for people who are not visually impaired and don't read Braille. But that's another area where this focus on the needs of handicapped children, or especially in children's literature, do you see that has been developing in the arsenal?
Oh, yes, in publishing scene, on the publishing scene in general. A year or two ago, there was a lament that we don't have books, Ukrainian books in Braille. And see what happens. That has changed. So what is very positive is the moment that we start talking about certain niche that is empty, or certain need that we have in the publishing field. Some time passes and something happens. This niche, new books arrive, new authors appear. And we've been observing that for a number of years, which is very good, positive tendency.
Of growth in general.
And more diversity also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's another discussion is that that there's also a ban now on, particularly on Russian books that are anti-Ukrainian in nature, and that there's been steadily less books imported, which means books from Russia, in essence. And imports are down in general. So that no doubt has an impact on the growth, perhaps, or demand for Ukrainian books.
I hope so. What Ukrainian publishers now do? They have started developing the intellectual sector of book market, because intellectual books, those were the books that we imported from Russia for many years.
Technical things or...
Well, but philosophy, for example, sociology, also business training books. Mm-hmm. And that is changing now, because Ukrainian publishers are paying special attention to this part of the publishing marketing. There is also a huge part of the book market was devoted to mass literature, and that was imported from Russia. I'm not a specialist, so I could not tell you in detail what's happening there. But we've seen numbers of Ukrainian mass market books, let's say detective stories, written by local authors or translated from other languages, which is good again, I think.
Mm. Well, that was certainly convincing when I went there yesterday and just saw the crowds and the faces of people and the enjoyment and the just simply atmosphere was so positive. So to sum up, I can say I think it's fair to draw the conclusion that the Ukrainian book is alive and thriving despite electronic media, despite the iPads. And right now, there's a great book happening in Kyiv. So come and join in if you can. And thank you for coming and talking to us, Olesya.
Thank you very much for having me.
Culture. The talented Crimean Tatar actor and director Akhtem Saitablayev has released a new film on the anniversary of the deportation of his people by Stalin in 1944. It's called Chuzha Moletva, which means foreign prayer. It's a dramatization of a real-life story about a Crimean Tatar woman who saved the lives of 88 Jewish children in Bakhchisarai, Crimea, when the peninsula was occupied by Nazi Germany. It hit Kiev's movie theaters on the 18th of May, the day when Crimean Tatars mark the anniversary of deportations. On Saturday, there will be a special screening of the film in Kiev's Zhotnevi movie theater, where the audience will have an opportunity to meet Saitablayev and his production team. Now, May 18th was also Ukrainian Embroidery Day. This is a day when all Ukrainians are encouraged to wear their national symbol. Parades were held in many cities, including Mariupol, that is on the front line in the Donbas. People who had to go to work wore their embroidered shirts to the office. Canada's Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland has Ukrainian roots, and she chose to wear her embroidered shirt on Parliament Hill in Ottawa. That day, she introduced a Canadian Magnitsky Act, which will expand sanctions against gross human rights violators. The act takes its name from the Odessa-born Russian lawyer and auditor who died in Russian custody after his investigations into state-sanctioned corruption. The US had passed a Magnitsky Act back in 2012. And in Canada, the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress has recently launched its Canada 150 Community Animator project. Across Canada, five Ukrainian-Canadian youth will organize 50 events within their provincial communities to celebrate 150 years since the Confederation of Canada. They will work to engage and inspire youth, work with Indigenous peoples to support reconciliation, connect Canadians with nature and encourage environmental stewardship, and celebrate diversity and inclusivity in Canada. Hromadske Radio Ukraine Calling team member Nicole King is a part of the project. And in music, Guzel Kerim means beautiful Crimea. It is a song performed by Crimean Tatars about their homeland. And here's a version just for you.
Залуштир, подих вітру, навію я сльозу. І смуток спогадів дитинства зроджує журбу. На чужині літа минають, думи тяжкі. Серце стискають, як за тобою я сумую, мій чарівний Крим. Мен буєрде, я ж умадим, я ж легима, то я умадим, є та нема, а все толду, ей, гюзель, Херим. Плоди садів твоїх солодкі, солодші за щербет. І вод твоїх джерельний присмак п'ю я ще і ще. На чужині літа минають, думи тяжкі, серце стискають, як за тобою я сумую, мій чарівний Крим. Мен буєрде, я ж умадим, я ж лима, то я умадим, є та нема, а все толку, ей, Гюзель, Херим. Призначці мені вітчизни, діти зрошують сльозу, наші старці у молитві возносять руки вгору. На чужині літа минають, думи тяжкі, серце стискають, як за тобою я сумую, мій чарівний Крим. Мен буєрде, я ж умадим, я ж Твоя лума дим'є та нема, а свет
тяжкі, серце стискає, як за тобою я сумую, мій чарівний Крим.
And in looking forward, next week we'll be following the headlines for you as always. Tune in for a new episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Oksana Smerichuk for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.